All right, welcome to episode number 29 of the Mitch and Nils Bull Show. My name is Mitch, the man. Talking to me, right next to my side is Jay Nils. Nils, what up, buddy?
All I want for my birthday is a big booty, Nils.
Each time you say that, it's even more ridiculous.
All right,
welcome to the Bulls Show. You're looking at the Chicago Bulls from a fan perspective. We're not experts. We're not insiders. We're not journalists, but we are two guys that love talking about Chicago, the Chicago Bulls. And on this week's episode, we're going to be talking to Chris Kasson, who is a beat writer for TheExaminer.com. He's great on Twitter, and he's also a contributor to CSN Chicago. So with no further ado, Chris, what's going on, buddy?
I mean, thank you guys for having me. Everything's going good. Hopefully, we get through this with no technical difficulties.
We're hoping.
Once again, thank you guys for having me and your patience.
We appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully, you just didn't jinx it. We should let our listeners know that this is probably, I think, our third attempt at recording, just because we're encountering some problems with technology.
Yeah, we're not good at technology.
But, you know, without further ado, before we dive into the Bulls, and the controversy surrounding Joakim Noah's benching last night. You know, Chris, we've talked to you a few times online, exchanged a few emails and tweets, but in light of the Manti Te'o fake dead girlfriend hoax, we got to ask you, are you in fact real?
I would like to believe that. I think we all, struggle, with the perception of what's real and what's not day-to-day life.
You're getting deep on us, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I can assure you that I am real.
No, we appreciate that, and we are fans of your work. We do read you frequently on The Examiner, covering the Bulls. So on a more serious note, we definitely want to give you a proper introduction and to our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with your work and your Bulls coverage. So, we'll start things off by asking you, how you got your start and really what you do on a day-to-day basis when it comes to the Bulls.
Oh, definitely. I first got my real start at any kind of online writing with a website by MVN.com. I really don't know if it's still online or not. I mean, the editor, John Burkett, really gave me my first opportunity via one of my mentors, Anthony Gilbert, who's also a journalist. And then, I did that for about a year, and then the Examiner contacted me. It was an online newspaper. It was just starting up. And I was like, the only way I would switch from these guys, to you, if you can actually push for me to get credentialed, because, the NBA is tough to get into. I mean, and the Bulls definitely are, as great an organization as it is, they're very careful on who they bring in terms of covering, because, if any NBA team, it'll be easy for them to say, why do we want to bring out outside media when we should direct all our traffic to, the team homepage. So,
Right. They got to add that Sam Smith spin on it.
Oh, exactly. I mean, by the graces of God, and believe 2009, the following year after I joined up with the Examiner, the Bulls, I think the Examiner had a long, lengthy fight with the NBA, and I was able to get credentialed, and since 2009, I've been keeping up with everything day to day, going to practices, games, certain road games, I'll go to, but mostly this. In close proximity, to, Indiana, Milwaukee and that stuff. But, it's been great to, be able to do something like this, especially, growing up, watching the team and, everybody was influenced by Michael Jordan, I believe, in, some way, shape or form. So, it's been a dream come true.
That's awesome, man. Who's your current favorite Bull to cover right now?
Oh, man.
If you had to pick favorites.
Currently, right now?
Yeah.
I would say it would have to be, a tie between Joakim and Derrick Rose. I mean, and, Joakim is him and, for as different, as many differences as him and, Coach Tom Thibodeau have, they have so many similarities, their burning desire, that will to win, at whatever cost. I mean, that's why I think, last night's situation is kind of funny, because, it's everything is done, with the good of the team in mind. And, yesterday's situation is unfortunate, and I don't really think nothing big is going to come out of it, but, those are two of my favorite guys. Rose is actually a little bit funny. Everybody knows him as this shy, quiet kid, but he's actually pretty funny.
He's not a robot?
Oh, no, not at all. Derek's just, little bit of a sense of humor. It's a little bit dry, but you know, Derek's a great guy to be around. I mean, one of the great guys to cover because he's not that typical, you know, quote unquote superstar. You know, he considers himself, you know, just another guy on the team, believe it or not.
Well, speaking of the incident last night, for those who did not get a chance to watch the Memphis game, the Bulls were in a pretty close game. They ended up losing by 3 in overtime. But the story of the game became a little bit more interesting when Joakim Noah did not return in the game for the entire fourth quarter, entire overtime, and actually half of the third quarter. So there was some talk about there being some type of dissension between Thibodeau and Joakim Noah. Now, Joakim was not available for comment after the game, correct?
That's correct. He was, you know, when the reporters were, you know, granted access into the locker room, he was already gone.
And is that something that usually happens, unusual? Do you usually get a chance to speak to all the players, or is that something?
I mean, you know, following games, you know, each player, you know, is usually available. I can only remember, you know, one time, you know, that, and it actually was Joakim. I believe it was last year, you know, when he threw the ball at the referee and got ejected. And, you know, he wasn't, you know, available for coming after that, but he commented on the next day after practice. But, you know, normally each guy is available to the media, you know, following games.
Now, you wrote a great article on the Examiner. For everybody who hasn't checked it out, check it out. You don't think that this is going to have any type of long-term impacts in terms of the season or the relationship between Thibodeau and Noah. Could you kind of expound upon that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's happened before. I mean, and, you know, it's happened to Noah. I mean, everybody remembers, you know, I think when Coach Tibbs first came here, you know, the first big quote-unquote controversy was, you know, sending Carlos Boozer in a road game in New Jersey, I believe, in the fourth quarter in favor of Taj Gibson. I mean, and, you know, as it's gone along, Joakim, you know, was set in fourth quarters and even in playoff games in favor of Omer Asik. Asik actually closed a lot of games, you know, during his 2 years here. Same with Taj Gibson, you know, in favor of Boozer here. I mean, even Derrick Rose last season, you know, was set in the fourth quarter, coming back from injury, a home game in Miami, I believe, and C.J. Watson hit a game-winning three-pointer. I mean, so it's happened. I mean, Thibodeau usually goes with, you know, the group that's hot, you know, the group that, you know, the Bulls were down 17, you know, in the third quarter yesterday, and that group, you know, pretty much gave him the energy that he was looking for, and, you know, so he rolled with him. You know, it got interesting, you know, in the overtime because, you know, Joakim still wasn't on the floor. And then there was a little bit more controversy. 39 seconds, Gibson fouls out and he brings in Nazir Muhammad in favor of, you know, instead of bringing Noah in. You know, I just think it's one of those things. I don't know if it's a message being sent, especially the way Noah started out the game. I just think it's one of those things where Thibodeau just went with, you know, the group that was hot. I mean, Noah not being available would add a little bit more, you know, a little bit juiciness to the story. But I don't think it's one of these things that lingers on, you know, especially with the way Thibodeau coaches, what's demanded, what he demands of his players. You know, I'm pretty sure it's squashed by now if there is any lingering, you know, feelings. But, I mean, it happens. Thibodeau's done it before, and I'm pretty sure he'll do it again.
Yeah, you know, you touched on it already about how Thibodeau just was kind of riding the hot hand or the hot lineup. And
yeah,
just to, you know, emphasize where it really got controversial was when Thibodeau elected to sub in Nazir Muhammad. Now, we have our own theories on this end, but, you know, you're pretty much squashing all of those. But, you know, you don't think it was maybe because either Thibodeau wanted to continue resting Joakim. Now, keep in mind, the Bulls had played the third consecutive overtime game. Exactly. Or was this possibly another theory that we've heard floating around the internet? Is that this could have been a disciplinary issue, whether it be for his comments against against the Boston Celtics after that Boston game on Friday. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I heard, you know, thing about the Boston Celtics and the whole the Kevin Garnett comments. I mean, you know, when you put a mic in front of Joakim, I mean, he's one of the most honest guys in that locker room. I mean, one of the most funniest guys in that locker room. I don't think that had anything to do with it. You know, I just think, you know, in that third quarter, they weren't getting anything. You know, the second quarter is really, you know, what happened. I mean, you know, I believe the Bulls were outscored 26-12 in that second quarter, only shot 26%. You know, and then the third quarter, you know, he still wasn't seeing what he wanted to see. You know, Joakim was pulled after making a turnover that led to a basket that put him down 16. And I just believe, you know, you got Taj in there, you have Boozer, you know, Marco, Nate, Jimmy, and, you know, those guys brought him back, got him their first lead in the fourth quarter. I don't believe he was resting them at all, because Thibodeau is definitely not one of those guys who will rest players.
He's definitely proven that over the past 2.5 years.
He's documented that well over the past, you know, 2.5 seasons. So I just think it was one of these situations where, you know, it was the hot lineup. And Noah's whole thing, you know, it's not about individual numbers and anything. He just wants to affect winning. And definitely when you're going up against an all-star front line of Zach Randolph, Mark Gasol, another all-star center, he wants to be in there. I mean, just like any player would at that position. So,
yeah,
I mean,
it definitely felt like, at least towards the end, that Memphis was really pounding the glass and getting a lot of offensive rebounds, especially with some missed free throw opportunities. And I don't think in the grand scheme of things it really negatively affected the Bulls, because we did dodge some bullets there at the end of regulation. But, you know, if there was a time to put in a guy who can get boards, you know, that would have been it. And it definitely did strike a lot of fans as peculiar not having Joakim in there. The one thing that I want to ask you is, you know, you mentioned that this probably won't have any lingering effects, at least amongst the Bulls players, the coaching staff, and in that locker room. But I do wonder, with just a week away before the All-Star reserves are announced, do you think this has any impact on Joakim Noah's All-Star consideration?
I don't believe so. I mean, because you're looking at the centers in the East. I mean, who else is there besides really Noah that can, you know, potentially, you know, take that spot? I mean, Kevin Garnett, he's a forward. But I don't think so. Noah's had such a great first half of the season. I mean, he's tailed off a little bit, you know, but, you know, he's still going out there playing with the same energy. I think the minutes did kind of get to him a little bit, but, you know, this is something he wanted, you know, since last season. I don't think this has any kind of effect on, you know, his potential first All-Star bid.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit earlier about the Bulls kind of, or Thibodeau's kind of pitching to go with the hot hand. Do you think that affects the team at all? Do you think that they're kind of used to that? Or what is the team's feeling about that type of situation?
I mean, I think they're used to it by now. I think, you know, They all admire Tibbs. I mean, what he brings, because, you know, there's all this talks about, you know, how long the practices are, you know, doing the closeout drills and all the little attention to detail stuff. But I remember Cal Korver, you know, when he was back last week, he said you can never argue with the results. And, you know, for as hard as he pushes those guys, I mean, you can't argue where they are now, you know, without Rose, you know, last year having Rose out the lineup. I mean, I just think, you know, this team knows they just have good character guys on that. There's nobody really on there with any kind that can, you know, bring that kind of negative aspect to the locker room or be angry. There's not that one bad seed who can kind of uproot the way things are. I mean, this team is still, you know, as quiet as kept, this team still believes that, you know, they can make some noise in the playoffs. So,
for sure.
You know, yeah, I mean, I think they're just used to it. They know how, you know, Tibbs is. Carlos Boozer alluded to it yesterday. I mean, I just think, you know, Joakim's so passionate, the same with Thibodeau about winning, that, you know, he felt he should have been in there, you know, no matter if he had a bad quarter or a bad stretch, he felt, you know, he should have been in there, especially when you're going up against, you know, two other all-stars.
Right. Well, if there was a silver lining to last night's loss, it had to be a guy that we want to talk about now, and that'd be Jimmy Butler. You know, he started out a little slow. I think he was either 1-for-10 or 2-for-10 from the field, but finished strong with a career high of 18 points. I think he had at least 8 points in that fourth quarter. Talk a little bit about Jimmy and his maturation, his development, and really his emergence now that Luol Deng's at least sidelined with that hamstring injury.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jimmy's worked his tail off, you know, even, you know, going back to his rookie year, you know, put in a lot of work with, you know, assistant coach Adrian Griffin last year. And then, you know, over the summer, pretty much when he wasn't, you know, palling around with Ronnie Brewer in Arkansas, you know, he was at the Birdo Center, you know, working out, you know, with Tibbs and, you know, the rest of those guys. But, you know, he's one of those diligent workers. I mean, and it was great to see him, you know, be able to get the opportunity, you know, yesterday, you know, with Dame being out. And, you know, it started off 1-for-9 from the field, but that fourth quarter, he just, you know, pretty much, you know, took it upon himself, you know, to get going. And he's the one player, you know, outside of Rose that can get to the free throw line almost on a consistent basis. I mean, the way, you know, he drives, the pressure he puts on the defense. I mean, you know, 12 points in the fourth quarter, 3-for-3 from the field, 6-of-6, you know, from the free throw line, 8 rebounds, 3 steals. I mean, he had a big steal in overtime where he chased Rudy Gay down and, you know, got the steal, got the Bulls another possession. So, you know, I believe, you know, he is worthy of more time. But when you got Luol Deng in front of you playing almost 40 minutes a night, it's kind of hard to, you know, see, you know, even 15, you know, minutes consistently. So, I mean, I believe he'll be, you know, more useful in the second half of the season, you know, depending on, you know, the lineup Steve's want to use. You'll be bringing Derek back at some point in time. So, you know, you have, you know, a lot of flexibility with things you can do with the roster. But, you know, Jimmy's, you know, emergence, I mean, he's going to continue to get better, but that all is going to come with more playing time. Is he more deserving of it? Yes. But will he get it with Deng? I'm not sure, but, you know, it's great to see.
All right. Well, also another player that I like to talk about, or we'd like to talk about, Carlos Boozer. He's definitely shown a lot, especially in this last month, improving his rebound totals, his point total, his field goal percentage. What do you think has been the difference between Carlos Boozer in the beginning of the season, who's playing relatively well, and the Carlos Boozer now over the last 10 games that has been just amazing?
Potential all-star.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I just think he's been a lot more aggressive. I thought this was the kind of, you know, the last 12 games, I thought this was the way Carlos Boozer would start the season, you know, because, you know, you look at the roster, you got Rose being out, you know, he's that one true go-to guy on offense, you know, that one guy who can get his own shot almost, you know, every time down the floor. I mean, you know, he's been much maligned here in Chicago, but you know, he is what he is. I mean, he's a potential 20-and-10 guy every time he's on the floor. So, and what I've seen this last couple of games, he's just been decisive with the ball. You know, his teammates been looking for him a lot more, setting him up in, you know, some great positions to score. I mean, he's capable of this. I mean, he's shown that over, you know, his career. But, you know, I just think, you know, this current stretch that we're seeing from him, I mean, it's just him, you know, just being more decisive and getting more opportunities, you know, to make this kind of impact.
Now, you said, you talked about how the fans have been pretty tough on Carlos Boozer in his time here. Is that something that you think he feels? You're around the team. You get to talk to the players in the locker room.
Yeah.
Do you think he cares? Do you think he's even aware of the hard time? Or
that's all that matters, yo.
I'll say Carlos Boozer went to Duke. So, I mean, you know, I say that, you know, him, J.J. Redick, those guys have heard, you know, almost every bad thing you could say to them, you know, from death threats to their families and things like that. So I'm pretty sure anything, you know, the media can write about him, anything fans say to him, just rolls right off his back at this point of his career.
So he could basically just paint his head. He won't even care.
Yeah, I'm saying that's the thing. I mean, you know, you can't say nothing to a guy, you know, like that.
No, I'm very happy. I mean, I'm slowly converting to becoming. I've already declared my you know, tentative presidency of the Boozer fair weather fan club.
Nah.
Fair weather fan club. I mean, we already know that Mitch here is a huge Boozer apologist, and he holds the throne for being, you know, Boozer's number one fanboy. But in terms of the fair weather fan club, I'm declaring my candidacy right here, right now. But so Chris, you know, looking forward, the Bulls right now sit at the 5 spot in the Eastern Conference at 23-16. They're pretty much tied in the loss column with seeds 3 through 5, you know, looking at Indiana and Brooklyn ahead of us. Before we look ahead, I want to ask, you know, how would you really characterize the Bulls season thus far? Has it met your expectations? What has surprised you the most? You know, describe for us this Bulls season thus far.
I believe at the beginning of the season I said, you know, this team could, looking at the way the East, you know, is configured, I always said this team could end up as a, you know, potentially as high as the 3 seed and, you know, as low as the 7 seed. I mean, and that, you know, a lot of factors played into that. Obviously, the health of Andrew Bynum in Philadelphia played a part in that. I mean, Atlanta losing Joe Johnson, trading Joe Johnson. But, you know, they're right where I expected them to be. You know, the only thing that's been surprising to me, you know, is the losses at home they suffered. You know, Charlotte, Milwaukee, you know, Phoenix, losses like that have been unexpected. The fact that they're 500 at home is surprising, but they're 12-5 on the road. You know, the second best road record in the NBA is surprising. But they're right where, you know, I had them at. You know, I think as the season goes along, they get better because, you know, that's Thibodeau's philosophy. You know, you want to be playing your best basketball at the second half of the season. So, and their whole thing is, you know, pretty much to hold the fort down. You know, Rose gets back, you know, and, you know, they're going to try to make their run at it still. So, but we'll see if that's what happens, you know, in the second half of the season.
Now, you touched on a little bit. The Bulls have been struggling a little bit at home, sitting around 500, but been one of the best road teams in the NBA. Can you put reasoning behind that? Is it just kind of a small sample size, you know, randomness, or is there some type of reason why the Bulls have not been as good at home as they've been in past years?
Yeah, that's been one of the things that, you know, I can't put my finger on. I mean, I look at some of the opponents they play at home, and I could just see, you know, all the factors, you know, that, you know, all the little excuses that you can, you know, point out. You know, in Thibodeau, this is a no-excuse team, but, you know, you got games against, you know, Charlotte, Milwaukee. I mean, they're not really – it's just human nature, you know, to get up for the big games. Even going on the road, there's a different aspect, you know, to playing at home. And, you know, it's still surprising because you look at the last two seasons under Tibbs, this is a team that's been all out, you know, no matter the opponent. So I still can't put my finger on why the struggles – at home, it's not like, you know, they're playing in front of 5,000 or 8,000 or 10,000 like, you know, a Detroit Pistons team is. You know, this is a team that's consistently selling out home games, and, you know, just for the most part, they have these lulls or they have these stretches at home where they just can't score, or, you know, the defense just tails off. So, I mean, I think that gets better, you know, especially, you know, when you look at Derek coming back. You know, you just, there's going to be a jolt. A serious jolt of energy, you know, when that happens. So I think, you know, the home record does get better, and hopefully they keep playing this way at home. But, you know, as far as the being 500 at home, I really can't, you know, pinpoint, you know, a singular reason to why there's been.
Yeah, you know, well, the good news is that despite their problems with subpar teams, the Bulls are a combined 4-0 against Miami and New York this season. Yes. And, you know, those are really what we're looking at, the top two teams in the East. How do you like our chances against the Heat and Knicks, given that we've been able to play pretty well against them in the regular season? And it seems like we're constantly dominating the boards against these teams. You know, do you think we have a legitimate shot at not just being, you know, a team that will be a tough out, but maybe a potential contender? Or am I getting a little too overly optimistic here?
Oh, not at all. I mean, when you got teams like, you know, there's Miami, everybody puts New York up there. I'm still one of those guys who feel New York's not, you know, really a contender yet. I mean, they had a great first half. I mean, they have, you know, once Raymond Felton gets back and all of those guys get healthy, I like to see all of them play, you know, together a couple of games till I get a real, you know, thorough, you know, opinion of those guys. But, you know, it's been a team that shot a lot of threes. Their defense has tailed off, you know, the past couple of weeks. But anytime you got a team that plays, you know, with the energy on defense that Chicago does, you're definitely talking about a team, you know, who's a contender. Indiana is also one of those dark horse teams that nobody wants to play simply because of the way they defend. And they'll be getting Danny Granger back, you know, sometime, you know, probably next month or a little bit after All-Star break. So the Bulls could definitely, I mean, I still don't think they can beat Miami currently constructed as is, because you just know Miami's waiting, you know, to the playoffs to turn it to another gear. I mean, I don't want to, you know, bring up LA, you know, because of the way they're struggling, but you just look at the way, you know, teams like Oklahoma and Miami, how they played against LA, where they turned their defense up to another level. And it's just, you know, staggering.
You know, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you on the Heat having another gear. I mean, you watched that L.A. game from earlier this past week on Thursday night where they really just look like the Monstars from Space Jam when they turned up. I will say this. It is good news here in Chicago when you hear that the Heat have signed Chris the Birdman Anderson to a 10-day contract.
Hey, man, don't hate on Birdman.
I'm just saying, if that is answer to your rebounding problems, you might have bigger problems than that. But whatever the case, you know, we're talking about the Heat. We're talking about the Knicks. Looking forward to the second half of the season. Obviously looking forward to the playoffs. We got to move on to the man, the one that Chicago is collectively holding their breath about, Derrick Rose. Obviously, our title chances hinge on his health. What is the latest on Derrick Rose? We know that the Bulls are being tight-lipped about his timetable, but maybe with you being on the inside, you might have a little inside information for us. What's the latest on D. Rose?
He still hasn't. I believe he's very close, you know, to starting, you know, taking contact in practices. You know, yesterday I happened to get to the United Center a little early, and he was actually, you know, running some of the stairs in the 300 level, and, you know, he did some, you know, cutting drills underneath the basket on the court, you know, for a while. You know, so I think he's very, if not, you know, right there, he should start taking contact relatively soon. You know, whether that's, you know, this starting this week, I believe is very close. I believe he'll be taking contact in practice, you know, before, you know, the end of this month. I mean, and he looks like, you know, he's doing more and more. The fact that he's running stadium stairs, you know, in the United Center, you know, at 3:30, you know, shows, you know, he's trying to push back. I mean, rev up, you know, his conditioning stuff now. So, I mean, I believe once that aspect happens where he starts taking contact in practices, they want to, you know, let him go through a couple of those stages. I don't know how many contact practice happens during the course, you know, of an NBA during the week or so, maybe two out of the week. So we'll see. I mean, but I still think Rose, you know, at best, at earliest, you know, should be back, you know, a little bit after, you know, the All-Star break. I still think, you know, he might be cleared to take contact at the end of this month, but, you know, with the Bulls being so cautious about him, you know, who knows, you know, how soon he'll be on the floor.
So Chris, you can't give us an exact date? We're looking for an exact date so that we can start buying tickets online and start trying to resell them at higher than face value.
You know, I don't even think, you know, as quiet as they've been, I don't even think Derek knows an exact date. He might have a date in his head that he wants to come back, you know, but it all essentially is going to, you know, be what Jerry Reinsdorf wants, what Paxton wants, Gar Foreman wants, there's so many people, you know, in on this whole process. It's not just going to be one person making the final decision.
Well, that's too bad because we thought you were going to come on this podcast and break news for us. I'm just messing.
It's been a million-dollar question all season.
How long do you think it's going to take for Rose to get back to that MVP level once he's back?
Oh, that's, you know, a very good question because, you know, even he, you know, he said he doesn't know how he's going to play when he's get back. And that's been one of the most, you know, that's something he's very excited about because, you know, he's obviously put on a lot more muscle. You know, his core is stronger, you know, because of the attention to detail and strengthening your core, your legs back up. I still believe Derek could be, you know, five times as better, you know, now than he would have been had he not gone through this process. I think it's going to take some time for it. We're going to see like flashes, you know, of the old Derrick Rose, but we're also going to see some new stuff. We're going to see Derrick probably picking and choosing his spots, you know, but I still think we're going to see some of those flashes that, you know, that MVP caliber Rose. It's going to take some time. I mean, you look at Ricky Rubio, you know, in Minnesota, obviously not the same type of player or athlete, but, you know, you're not going to play him the second game of back-to-backs. You know, you're not going to throw him out there and play, you know, 30 minutes. He might be on a 15 or 20, 22-minute, you know, time frame when he gets back. But, you know, I always said it's going to be more interesting when the playoff starts. Do you keep him on that minute schedule? Because he's going to want to play. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's going to be some sense of, there's going to be some kind of dilemma, you know, in terms of his minutes, you know, as we get further along into the season, because Ricky Rubio is starting now. Amon Shumpert, you know, came back last week from New York and he started, but he played 15 minutes. But right. there's going to be some push, you know, like, hey, you know, guys, I'm ready, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But, even no, beyond
having Kirk Heinrich in there for, you know, 28, 30 minutes a game.
Right, right. Well, beyond the you know, another critical aspect of Rose's return, beyond him reaching or regaining his individual capabilities, is how he's going to actually fit into the team and integrate himself into this lineup. Because, you know, this is a different Bulls team than it was last season when he was playing. Obviously, the core is still in place. The bench has been revamped, and I'm not in any way insinuating that the Bulls are better off without Rose, but obviously there's going to be some drop-off in the production of guys like Carlos Boozer, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng when Rose returns. How do you see Rose really fitting into the dynamic of this current Bulls roster?
I mean, I think there's going to be that period of, you know, when to take my shot, when to attack. But, I mean, knowing Derrick Rose, he might get back out there and, you know, he's going to play aggressive. He might pick and choose his spots at first, but I think probably the second or third game, you know, he's going to get back to that attacking Derrick Rose, because that's when he's at his best. I mean, that's going to take away the production of, you know, like you said, Luol Deng, obviously, Carlos Boozer, Joakim Noah is not going to get, you know, as many opportunities as he's had so far this season. But I think what that does is it takes a lot of pressure off guys, and it kind of make things a little bit easier now, because even when Derrick gets back, you know, you got teams still have the game plan for him. And, you know, he commands so much attention, you know, that still leaves opportunities for certain guys. You just got to hit open shots and be ready for the ball. I mean, he's not going to come back and take, you know, all the shots. But, you know, I believe he's going to be aggressive when he does get back. I mean, and like I said, it will take away, you know, some guys' touches. But I also believe that a lot of guys will get a lot more easier opportunities than they've had so far.
Yeah, the thing that I will find interesting is who exactly they pair up with Rose in the backcourt. You know, there's been rumors going forward that, you know, Kirk Heinrich is our two guard of the future. I've actually equated a Heinrich and Rose pairing in the backcourt to this generation's Eric Snow and Allen Iverson. You know, I guess that backcourt did reach the finals at least once. We'll see if that same fortune holds for us. But, you know, do you see a drop-off in minutes for Heinrich, Robinson? I mean, we almost have, I wouldn't say an embarrassment of riches at the backcourt slots, but obviously, you know, we definitely have a lot of players at those positions.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Richard Hamilton. I mean, do the Bulls find someone, you know, to take him? I mean, there hasn't been a market for him because, you know, he was hurt pretty much all of December. I mean, he's been back, and, you know, the last, you know, besides last night's game, I mean, the current stretch in Toronto and Boston, I mean, he's played great. I mean, you know, it's been hitting his spots on his cuts, you know, been mid-range shots has been falling. So I think a lot of that, you know, as far as the backcourt minutes, a lot is going to have to do with, you know, are they able to trade Rip Hamilton? And if they don't, then, you know, it's going to be, I think Nate Minish drops off a lot because, you know, Tibbs, obviously, there's some value there because of what he can bring offensively. But there's obviously, you know, terms of slippage in terms of ball security and stuff when he's in. So, I mean, Kirk definitely will, you know, be the, you know, the winner in all of this because he doesn't have to play as many minutes. And, you know, I hope a situation doesn't come where they'll start putting him on bigger guys, because this guy's already had numerous ailments, you know, throughout this season. And, you know, guarding bigger guys, you know, that he can do that, but you don't want him to have to do that, especially going into the playoffs when you need a guy like him to facilitate offense.
Right. Have you heard anything with possible moves, roster moves with the Bulls? You mentioned earlier Rip Hamilton possibly being moved. Is that a possibility? Would you be surprised to see something happen?
I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, Rip go. I mean, I think, you know, he's even, you know, prepared for it. The Bulls want to avoid that luxury tax. I mean, the fact that, you know, they brought over Daquan Cook, you know, is no surprise at all, because, you know, you move him, let's say you get back, you know, a cheap center, you know, hopefully he can give you, you know, some some production. You move Marco into the starting lineup.
More production, a little more than Nazi Muhammad?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But you've seen the way Marco's played when he started, and he knows he's going to get those minutes. I mean, it's night and day. You know, I mean, Jimmy Butler, you know, he'll get more minutes, and Daquan Cook gets what's left. But, you know, I've heard, you know, I know they're trying to trade him. I just don't know that there's a market out there. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's still on the roster after the trade deadline. I mean, it's just what it is. I mean, at his age and, you know, his injury history the past two seasons, you know, teams are taking a gamble if they're, you know, trading for him.
Well, Chris, I got to ask you a favor. If Rip does go, since you do have daily interactions with the players, Rip included, I just ask that you see if he could leave his Jordan collection for us before he leaves town.
Oh, man, dude, like Rip, like it's nothing. Like, I'm not going to say that because Rip has, like, U-Hauls and storage is full of Jordans. But Nate Robinson has two lockers full of shoes. So,
there's a little sneakerhead battle then going on between them.
No, Nate can't compete with Rip at all.
Oh,
Rip,
yeah?
Yeah, Rip has stuff with, you know, his name on it.
Hey, well, next time. Next time, I assume that you're working the Lakers game tomorrow. Next time, maybe if you just, you know, sneak a couple pairs inside your book bag and bring them over to the Bulls show, we'd appreciate that.
Hey, I told Nate if he was a size 12, you know, I would have already, would have been an incident for us.
Well, speaking of the Lakers, the Bulls are going to be playing the Lakers on Monday, and obviously the NBA world has definitely, I guess, been mesmerized by the Lakers' season so far,
losing today against the Raptors.
Yeah. As an NBA guy, along with being a Bulls guy, remedy the Lakers for me. Is this something that can be solved, or is this just the way it's going to be?
I think this is the way it's going to be, and I mean, you know, I'm very close to, you know, a couple of Lakers fans, and you know, Lakers fans hate when you tell them. They hate going through this process, but they hate when you tell it to them. I mean, the losses to Toronto, you had six straight losses a little while ago. They're 2-8 in their last 10 games. I mean, it hasn't been the season that any of them expected. I mean, you know, you don't fire a coach 5 games into the season, especially in that kind of market with those kind of players. I mean, and you look at Mike Brown, he didn't even have, you know, a real, you know, full training camp with a healthy, you know, Dwight Howard, you know, to work with. So, I mean, and just look at how they play. I mean, the defense is just horrible. But then again, it's a Mike D'Antoni system. Defense really isn't stressed in that system. I mean, I really don't think he was the right guy for this job. But, you know, they needed to put a Band-Aid on a bad situation. And unfortunately, you know, the wound was already, you know, too big, you know, at 5 games into the season. And it's increasingly, you know, growing, you know, As the games go on. I mean, you can see the frustration levels in the players, especially Kobe. I mean, the fact that Kobe is leading the league in scoring at, what, age 34, you know, tells you all you need to know. I mean, that tells you right there that Steve Nash is not playing the way, you know, he's been accustomed to playing. You look at Paul Gasol shooting a career worst 42%. You look at Dwight Howard, who I felt came back 2 months earlier than he should have. I mean, and it's all led to this. I mean, the bench isn't that great at all. There's no hustle on defense. You know, they lost Jordan Hill, Steve Blake. So, I mean, it's been all downhill for the Lakers.
So it sounds like you subscribe to the belief that the Lakers will not make the playoffs this year.
Oh, not at all. I mean, look at 1-8. 1-8, you know, considered like traditionally in the West, is always tight. You know, the first two seeds have like a 5-game, might be 5 games ahead over everybody else, but you know that 3-8 is normally pretty tight. Right. And I believe Houston right now is the AC at 20-20. The Lakers are 6 games under 500 right now. So they would need like Portland, Dallas, Houston, all of those guys, you know, to suffer like some major injuries to even make ground. And the fact that they're losing to bad teams doesn't help at all.
Right, right. Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Now, before we let you go, real quick then, give us a prediction for tomorrow's game, Bulls-Lakers.
I mean, it's one of those games that I can see the Bulls coming out and being on fire because, you know, with the whole Noah situation, the Noah and Thibodeau situation, there's obviously going to be, you know, some headlines about that. And, you know, will that play a part in the rest of the season? I expect, you know, Noah to come out, you know, inspired. I mean, he's going up against, you know, a guy he typically doesn't do well against in Dwight Howard. But, you know, Dwight Howard definitely hasn't been the same Dwight Howard we're accustomed to seeing. I see the Bulls, you know, coming out on top of this game simply because the Lakers are so bad defensively that the Bulls can pretty much, you know, get what they want, anything they want. It's just all about, you know, who's got the hot hand and how aggressive they come out on the offensive end. But I believe it's going to be a good game. It'll be a game that, you know, they're of course up for because it's one of these marquee games. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, but I believe the Bulls will come out on top of this one.
Yeah, it's funny because the Bulls, you know, have been characterized as playing to the level of the competition. You usually think playing to the level of competition against the Lakers, they'd play at a high level, but this year it's a little different.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just got to play now. The fact that you're going against, you know, two future Hall of Famers, three, you know, I always, you know, forget to include Paul Gasol in there. I mean, Dwight Howard is one of the better centers, you know, in the NBA. So I believe it's a game that, you know, they have to come out because Lakers still, you know, can, you know, put up points in a hurry on you.
Do you see Deng playing tomorrow?
Oh, I mean, you know what? I'm going to err on the side of caution and believe that, you know, he may sit out again. I know they had, you know, the treatment today. And, you know, it's been a couple of days. But the fact that, you know, the severity of how sore he said it was, you know, the swelling, I mean, I could see him sitting out. But the fact that it is the Lakers and, you know, he might want to get back out there. I mean, he could play tomorrow, but I still think it'll be, if you err on the side of caution and you want to be smart, I think you should, you know, sit him out, you know, especially with the way Jimmy played, you know, the second half of, you know, last night games against Memphis.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on to the Bulls Show. We really, really appreciate all your insight, all your insider knowledge. For our listeners, if you're not following Chris online or on Twitter, I believe the Twitter is C4Dunk, right?
Yes, correct.
C4Dunk, he's a great follow, especially during the games, great analysis. If you're following us, you definitely should be following Chris. And once again, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, guys, thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right, man. Well, take care, and we'll speak to you soon.
Definitely. I'll try to get you those Jordans also.
I appreciate that.
All right. For Nils, this is Mitch. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show, and we'll be back next week with the Bulls Show.